105 Drive with Julian Clover. Cambridge 105.
The Gadget Guide.
And Rob Chipperfield is here.
Evening, Julian, and welcome along to this fortnight's Gadget Guide. And actually back in the studio this week, so hopefully no chopping off halfway through the...
I feel we haven't seen each other for ages, or indeed completed the sentence.
That's true. I think it was Mr. Willett on the last time we were here live. But I am. Lawrence has vanished off somewhere at the other end of the country, but I'm here. So in a few moments, we'll be looking at some of the new toys that have been launched in a couple of weeks from a few of the big players. But first of all, a look at some of the slightly smaller news stories in the tech world. And we'll start off with a couple of ones that are more, I guess, on the legal side of things than necessarily gadgets themselves, but have implications on that. First of all, you remember we've talked about a little bit in the past about some of the mergers of the mobile phone operators in the UK. So we had EE, which was formerly T-Mobile and Orange.
I've kind of lost track of them, really. There's been so many.
there have, and each one's sort of been owned by different people over different years. So EE was T-Mobile and Orange. And then there were these rumours of O2 and 3, or the owners of 3 sort of merging together, which would have made another...
5.
Yes, true. O5. I'm not sure what chemical that is. But that would have effectively left you just with 3 major players in the UK market, Vodafone being the only ones who really aren't in bed with anyone else.
Mm. And when people think of other brands, of course, they're just piggybacking on top of the network.
Very much so.
Like Virgin, for example.
Yeah, so GIFGAF is O2. They're actually owned by O2, which is the slightly bizarre...
Are they? I didn't know that.
They are,
okay,
yeah.
That's interesting. But I guess it's similar to Now TV being owned by Sky. It's a similar sort of thing,
exactly.
Isn't it?
It's a different brand, sort of targeted at a different group of people, but it's the same company. And Ofcom are a little bit uncomfortable about this. Ofcom, the regulatory body for all things communications, they're sort of saying, well, is this actually good for consumers? You know, at what point do we start getting back into monopolies and the situation we had some tens of years back with BT being split up and forced to provide access to its network? Are we in danger of going back into that? Will this actually be the right thing for consumers? But at the same time, what do you do? So that's one to watch. Nothing firm happening yet, but we'll see what happens. And the other one, this has been no doubt in very much on your radar if you're involved in the software industry, is the European Court of Justice ruling on what's called Safe Harbour. This all sounds very boring, and it largely is, except for the fact that it's going to have a lot of implications for a lot of companies. And it's basically to do with the fact that in the European Union, we're very hot on privacy. We've talked about that on the Gadget Guide in the past. But there's a lot of companies that do business over here that are actually based in America. And data on the internet moves around. Yeah, you don't actually know whether a website's hosted in the US or the UK. And there's been this concept called Safe Harbor, which is basically declaring that there is similar level of protection for your data, whether it's in a server in the United States or whether it's in a server in the European Union. And up till now, basically, it's been a case of saying, yep, we're playing by Safe Harbor, it's basically the same. The European courts have ruled that that's no longer adequate, and you now have to actually put some more stuff in. I think it's looking like it's mostly going to be a paperwork exercise, but there's going to be a lot of paperwork.
It's going to be very, very interesting. I had an interesting conversation with Professor John Rust and his colleagues at the university in the week, and they are working on it's actually going to be part of a session which I'm chairing at the Festival of Ideas in a couple of weeks. And they were talking about the whole concept of maybe requiring people like Facebook and Twitter and others who collect data and information about us to give people an option, which is basically pay for the service. And in return, the data is, you know, your data isn't used.
And this is a real ideological...
And they've calculated the amounts as well, which is... I wish I could remember I think it was something like... this is going to be wrong, but something like $15 for Facebook and $5 for Google or something of that order.
Yeah, and it's an ideological shift, because if you look at the obvious two, which is Apple and Google, you've got Android and the Google platform, which is where you don't pay very much for the software. You get an awful lot of stuff for free, but the payment in kind is that your data is used for advertising targeting and a lot of that sort of thing. Whereas with Apple, you pay a premium for the hardware, you pay a premium for the services and the software. but that's where they make their revenue. And that's, you know, it is very much an ideological difference. And Apple have actually been pushing very hard in terms of data privacy, making sure that they can actually see as little as your data as possible. So that Google want to be able to see everything because that lets them provide the services they provide as best they can. Apple are actually pushing in the opposite direction, where they're trying to see as little as possible so that they can't be forced to hand it over.
Yeah, it's a very, very interesting area, I think. I don't know, is market segmentation going on in there as well?
Very, very much so. So that's the ones on the legal side. Now, the US government, there's related to this. There's a whole load of stuff going on over in the US with these back doors. The government over there is saying, hey, look, in order to be able to fight crime, we need to
services are going to be very grumpy about that.
Exactly. That we need to be able to see this in the same way that historically, if they wanted to, they could put a physical tap on your phone line. That's hard when it's WhatsApp. Because what happens when you've got a British citizen over in France using a service provided by a US company? Whose jurisdiction is that for?
Well, it has to be said, you know, they're security services. If they want to get hold of the information, they're going to do it.
Yes, but under whose laws? And that's the big thing. Under which jurisdiction? If you're using Snapchat in France and you're a British citizen via a German SIM card, are you bound by US law, British law, French law?
It's confusing, isn't it? Because you have all of this going on at FIFA at the moment,
yes,
who are domiciled in Switzerland, and it comes out as a result of an investigation by the United States.
Yeah.
How does that work?
Yeah, exactly. So
send for a lawyer.
So international law is very tricky when it comes to that. A little bit more technology related, but still on the security, actually. LastPass, and we've talked about password managers in previous shows. This is where you basically have one master password, which only you use. You only use for your password manager. That then basically stores a secure list of passwords that you can then use a different one for each website without having to remember them all yourself. LastPass is one of the big ones. They've been acquired by LogMeIn, who
have
do
they?
Remote access.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yep. So LogMeIn have been a big player in the sort of remote support and remote systems administration.
I have in the back of my mind, LastPass are also responsible, I think, for Xmarks, which is a bookmark syncing service. Which ran into a little trouble a few years ago and very nearly closed, and LastPass bailed them out, I seem to recall.
Yeah, I think so. That was the old Firefox one. And then finally on the news, a nice one. Edward Snowden, who you no doubt heard of, famous or is it infamous for leaking a whole load of intelligence service data?
I think both.
He depends on your perspective. He joined Twitter a week or so back. And you know when you first join Twitter, they sort of send you an email saying, hey, someone's favorited your tweet, or someone's retweeted your tweet, or someone's followed you. So he joined Twitter, and he didn't turn off those emails. And when you're Edward Snowden, you go from 0 to 1.26 million followers and counting. This is according to our friends over at Engadget. 1.26 million followers within the space of one tweet in about a week. One tweet got favorited 110,000 times, 120,000 retweets. Each of these was an email, 47 gigabytes of notification emails.
I'm assuming that his email storage is up to spec.
I'm not sure, actually. So yes, make sure if you're Edward Snowden and you're thinking of joining Twitter, turn off your emails.
Mind you, if the security services are going through his emails, they're going to have some fun now, aren't they?
Exactly. So there we go. We'll be talking about, like I said, the latest mobile devices from Microsoft and Apple.
The Gadget Guide.
Welcome back. That's the one. Welcome back to the Gadget Guide.
Did you switch microphones on me?
I don't think so.
I thought you were purple earlier. Okay.
No.
I just wasn't paying attention.
Still green, and indeed Android green to start with, because a few bits of news from the land of Google. First off, they've released the new version of their Android operating system. This is Android 6, codename Marshmallow.
Okay.
If you've not followed the Android release naming theme, each one major release goes up in the alphabet, so A, B, C, D, E, F, G. They're up to M now.
Oh, I thought it was just random sweets and chocolate. It's not. It's a theme.
And that's the thing, is that it then goes beyond that. It's sort of the next letter of the alphabet, and then it's a dessert.
Okay.
So L was like, lollipop.
It's like hurricanes, isn't it, really?
Exactly.
It's the same, same principle.
Exactly. So L was lollipop and K was Kit Kat and I was ice cream sandwich and M is marshmallow. So that's been out. And a few you know, nice bits and pieces, really. You know, better battery life, some nice battery saving features. What else have they got? They've done another revamp of the user interface a little bit, so that's a little bit cleaner and shinier. But with that, of course, also comes the new devices and the Nexus range of phones. They're, basically, what they do is they let anyone build Android devices. So LG will do it, Motorola will do it, Samsung will do it, and so on. But then for each generation, Google will basically commission a device that is the gold standard, if you like. So it's bare bones Android. It's not been added to. It's not been taken away from. It's just raw Android. And this time around, they've actually gone for two. And that's the Nexus 5X and the 6P. Okay. And the reason for that was that they had gone sort of the Nexus 1 and the 4 and then the 5 and various other ones. And then the Nexus 5, which was a normal phone, was followed by the Nexus 6. And the Nexus 6 was not discrete. It was very much in the phablet camp. So it was a 6-inch screen. And
frankly, so did it say phablet?
Phablet. Phone come tablet. It's sort of halfway between a phone and a tablet.
Okay, I understand now.
In terms
that's fine.
Of screen size. And a 6-inch screen, frankly, is a little bit of a stretch to put in your jeans pocket. And a lot of people said, well, I kind of want the new phone, but it's too big. And so this time they've gone both ways. They've said, okay, if you want the smaller phone, get the 5X. It's an LG device with a 5-inch screen. And that's basically the same size as the Nexus 5 was. If you want the bigger one, then you go for the 6P instead. And that is made by Huawei, if that's the correct pronunciation. I think it is.
I believe it is.
Our friends over in China. So they've gone for two different manufacturers, two different screen sizes. And it means that now you don't have to sort of make that decision of, I want a newer phone, but I don't want it to get bigger, because they've just been on this ever-increasing trend to get bigger and bigger and bigger. They've also split the pricing. So the Nexus 5X, I think, is going for... Where is it? I've lost the price now. Coming soon.
Probably. Expensive, I suspect.
Well, no, the 5X is relatively cheap. £449, give or take. Whereas the high end of the 6P is going at about £579. So it means that you can actually go for a cheaper device, but still be on the latest generation. So it's interesting they've done those. Those will be coming soon, probably in the next few weeks or so, I think. Meanwhile, over in the Microsoft land, this is a really interesting one. Because, of course, a few weeks back, Apple launched their iPad Pro, which was the gigantic iPad.
Yes, that's very strange. I just found the launch of that just completely strange, I have to say.
It was, although I have heard several people saying that they're going to get them, so you know, maybe not quite that strange. So that was a gigantic iPad. I think it was an 11-inch screen, I think, with a detachable keyboard.
But that's very much a business thing, isn't it? I think it's what must be going on there.
It is, and Microsoft have responded, and they've done so with the Surface Book. So the Microsoft Surface has been around for a little while. It's their tablet. And the Surface Pro 3, for example, was very nice. It was basically a laptop without a keyboard that you could put a keyboard back onto. But now they've taken it to the Surface Book, which is a laptop, except that you can detach the screen and use the screen as a tablet, effectively.
Okay.
And the interesting thing about this compared to the iPad Pro is a couple of bits. First of all, they've put an extra battery in the keyboard, and that's interesting for two reasons. First of all, it means you get better battery life, but also it means the weight distribution is better. Because if you've got a laptop on your lap, if you can imagine that sitting on the train or something like that, you want the weight in the bottom of it. You don't want the weight in the screen, because otherwise, when you're sitting at a bit of an angle...
Oh, it's going to topple over, isn't it?
Exactly.
Okay.
And that's the problem with things like the Surface 3. They're great if you use them on a desk or a table or something like that. If you've got them on your lap, they're a bit cumbersome, because all the weight's in the screen. The keyboard's very light. With the Surface Book, they've put more of the weight down into the keyboard area, so they've solved the balance problem. But at the same time, you can still detach it and use it as an even slimmer tablet, not quite as thin as something like the iPad Air and the like. But it runs full Windows, so it's not just iOS, it's not just Chrome OS or Android, it's a full Windows PC. So that means if you're looking at the business users, actually, they can use these as a replacement for their desktop PC whilst getting all of the portability from of the tablet. So I think they're actually onto something there. And if they can pull it off, if they can make it like it looked in the keynote, I reckon they could really be onto a bit of a winner there. And it's a bit unusual that people get excited about a Microsoft hardware announcement, to be honest. but actually, it does.
It is a tricky one, though. I have a laptop and I have an iPad, and I kind of half made the decision that I wouldn't replace one or the other when one needed replacing. But then I inadvertently left my iPad in a Slovakian hotel room and for a month for all sorts of complicated reasons,
right.
And I missed it.
Interesting, yeah, but there's two schools of thought, because the way that people use their mobile phone is very different to the way they use their laptop, for example. So when you're on your laptop, you're normally on it, your full attention is on the device, you're maybe switching between several tasks. On the other hand, when you're on a phone, you're probably dipping in and out, maybe you're walking down the road, hopefully also looking where you're going, maybe you're sort of on your way to a meeting, something like that. It's very much a sort of dip in, get the information you want, dip out. And the tablet sits somewhere in the middle. And I think that it's really the Surface Book and the iPad Pro is an attempt to bring that sort of deeply involved, you know, real concentration use, the content creation, rather than just consuming, rather than just a bit of casual web browsing, actually creating content onto that tablet form factor. And I think with the Surface Book, I think they might just have a hope of doing that.
That's very interesting, actually. And for some people, that's going to be absolutely fine. I guess obviously slightly different for designers and others.
Except you've got a very nice display on it. I forget the resolution of the display, but you've got a very high quality display on it, and you've got a touchscreen. So actually, for some kind of graphic design, it's not a silly idea.
Okay.
So there we go. So that's the Microsoft Surface Book. It'll probably come out, we're reckoning, about the sort of £1,000 to £1,200 mark. So comparable to a sort of a one of the Ultrabook-style laptops that you see. A bit more than just a standard iPad or Android tablet, certainly some of the lower-end tablets, but very much positioning itself as a laptop replacement that also fills the tablet niche.